So first sermon as a curate, no pressure at all. Very easy. As Paul was saying, I'm curate here. I've been curate for 4 weeks. So all sorted, got everything sorted out now. Some of you may think my face is familiar. I have been at Trinity for the last 2 years, so I've been on placement here as well for the last 2 years, although primarily I've been kind of coming to the morning service and been worshipping there. So I thought it'd be good to introduce myself and then introduce the passage and what we're going to look at tonight before we get into it. So as Paul says, I'm Neil. I'm married to Natalie. I've got three boys, some ages 10, 8, and 11, 8, and 5, something like that. Anyway, three boys. We've been in Bristol for about 10 years and love this city. It's just an amazing city. And we came here from New Zealand. We've been in New Zealand for 3 years, which is an amazing country. But we're so excited to be in this city and to be part of this church and what God is doing in this place. It is so exciting. But what gets me up in the morning, what is the thing that kind of, just keeps me ticking? I'd say it's about making disciples. God has called us to be a people who follow Jesus. And in following Jesus, we help other people follow Jesus. And I love just being part of a church where we see that happen, where we each and every one of us take our part in doing that. God said that we need to love God and love each other, and that we need to go and make disciples, make followers of Jesus in doing that. And so this series that we're looking at, this series on open the eyes of our hearts and doing what we see the Father doing, is at the heart of discipleship, at the heart of seeing ourselves following Jesus and seeing others following Jesus. And so in doing that, we've been looking at the powers of, and tonight we're going to look at the power of waiting. The power of waiting. So we're going to look at that through John's Gospel, and we're going to look at that in John 11. So Catherine's going to come and read that for us. Or we're going to take little extracts from it, because I want to look at the story of it. There's so much great stuff, and Paul read earlier a bit from it that we're not going to read right now, but I encourage you to take this whole chapter away and just to read it through this week and allow God to continue to speak to you in this passage. But John 11.
If you'd like a Bible, stick up your hand. And one of the team will bring it around. I don't know if the stuff on the screen is going to follow what I'm reading, so skip along. Now a man named Lazarus was ill. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay ill, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is ill." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This illness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed where he was 2 more days. He went on to tell his disciples, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him." Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have always heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Catherine. So can I get you to turn to your neighbour and tell them something, the best thing that you've waited for? What's the best thing that you've waited for? Right. I heard all of them. They're amazing. Fantastic. Thank you very much. Now I'm going to get you just to think for yourself, just by yourself. What are you waiting for at the moment? What are you waiting for at the moment? It might be a God thing. It might be just a practical thing. They're all mixed in together, but you know what I mean. What are you waiting for at the moment? We'll come back to that in a minute. In this story we've just heard, we see Jesus has been and continuing his ministry, and he's been raising up disciples and getting them involved in the work as well. And then we hear about his friend who has died, or is sick at this point anyway. And I don't know if you're like me, but perhaps it's a male thing, I don't know, or it's a activist thing or what, but If there's a problem, I can go and fix it. If there's a problem, I'm just kind of like, right, let me get there and I'll go and fix it. And I kind of read this and I kind of thought, well, Jesus is kind of the Son of God. He's healing people, so he can just go and fix it. That's brilliant. But it's really interesting that he waits. The power of waiting, he waits. And in his waiting, he gets on with some other stuff. Why is he waiting? What's going on? He doesn't just chase after the thing that is in front of him, but he is waiting for the time. And in the midst of this story, the first thought that came to me in the midst of it is this is not a story. We've seen already in Jesus' ministry, a ministry of healing. But this is not a story of healing. This is a story of resurrection. And so it was about timing. It was about Jesus wanting to come at the right time to bring that. And so the power of waiting to see, waiting for that right time. And I was thinking about this for me, when I was at university, where have I seen that kind of that waiting thing happen? And when I was at university, I loved having conversations. I loved having conversations with people kind of on my corridors. I was in Hall's residence for 2 years in Sheffield. And I loved having loads of conversations. But an evangelist friend of mine said to me in my second year, because we were chatting about how effective these conversations were. Generally, there were people who had probably had a bit to drink. And so they really wanted to have a conversation and they really wanted to chat about stuff. And I was sitting there thinking, this is an amazing conversation. We're talking about all this stuff, all their questions, all these things. And he said to me once, he said, what happened after that? What happened as a consequence? And I thought about it for a bit and I went, actually not a lot, because most of the time those conversations were kind of lost in a bit of a haze of a kind of a sobering up the next morning. And they kind of didn't really remember because there was a kind of freedom in those conversations. And so he challenged me to say to people as we started conversations, I'll give you the answer to that question when you really want to know. When you're really ready to ask. I got to bed earlier, which was amazing. But actually, I found that I just began to start having more significant conversations with people at university. Because I wasn't quick to jump in. I wasn't quick to try and be the solution that was there. But I was waiting to see where God was at work and where there was a real heart and a desire to see something. I was recently reading a book. I've read an awful lot of books over the last 2 years, way more than I thought I would do at college, training to be a curate and then on to be a vicar. I was reading one book recently, and it was all about mission, all about kind of being out there and sharing your faith and making disciples. And this one book was talking about a guy who, living in his street, and he just wanted to bless his street. He organized street parties. He organized people coming back to his house. Every Friday night was kind of a social in his house and people just coming and hanging out. And then he would begin conversations and he'd pray for people. And this book was talking about one such incident where a lady, his next door neighbor, came to him kind of in the early evening and said, I've just been thinking about my life. And I've been thinking it's not really what I want it to be. And actually, as I've seen you and I've come into your house, I've seen your family and I've seen how amazing your family is and how it's nothing like my family. And I've seen your marriage and I've seen how good your marriage is and it's not really what mine is like. And so I want to find out how you do it. And his story goes on to say that his instant reaction was, great, now's the time. I can have this conversation. And he just sensed God stop him. And so he just paused and he waited and he listened. And God said to him, send her away and tell her that the reason that you have what you have is because of Jesus. And say to her, and encourage her to go back to her house, to get on her knees, and to ask Jesus to come into her life. So he was like, okay. So he did. And the next morning, she came knocking on the door, and she said, I did exactly what you said. And she said, in the middle of the night, Jesus came to her, and she invited him into her life. And she's now beginning to work out what that means for her and her family and her marriage and all those kind of different things. And the whole point was that God met her and it was about Jesus, not about how good he was at being a Jesus person. He introduced her to Jesus and it was the right time. But in that listening, he just waited. He stepped back. And I guess I would be that type of person who would step into something and want to kind of give all those answers and help her to work it through. And sometimes that is right. But it's that waiting. It's the waiting to listen and it's the waiting to give space for Jesus to do what he wants to do that sees change and transformation. And we see that in this. As I said, Jesus knew what the Father wanted to do. We see in this story, it says that this sickness is not going to kill Lazarus. He's not going to die from this sickness. He could see, he knew, he had knowledge of where this was going. But he knew he needed to wait for the right time. And as I was thinking about this and this waiting and doing the right thing at the right time, I was reminded of two stories. One of them I was actually reminded of last week when a few of us have been off to New Wine for this last week. I've had two showers, one bath since then because it was pretty muddy. But I was reminded of one of these stories then as I was listening from the Bible, and then that reminded me of another one as well. So in 1 Samuel, we're just going to jump. Oh, where's it gone? There it is. In 1 Samuel, there's two kings in this bit of the story in Samuel who, in not waiting, one made the right choice and one made the wrong choice, and it had consequences for the rest of their lives. And in 1 Samuel 13, it's Saul. And in this, he's going into battle and he's fighting different groups of people. And then it says in verse 7 and then into 8, Samuel remained at Gilgal, and all the troops who were with him were quaking with fear. He waited 7 days, so he did some waiting, the time set by Samuel, who was a prophet at the time. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and Saul's men began to scatter, so he panicked. He kind of thought, oh, I've waited, but I'm panicking now. So he said, bring me the burnt offering and the fellowship offerings. And Saul offered the burnt offerings. Just as he'd finished making the offering, Samuel arrived. And Saul went out to greet him. What have you done? Asked Samuel. Saul replied, when I saw that the men were scattering and that you did not come at the time and that the Philistines were assembled at Michmash, I thought, and now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal and I will have not sought the Lord's favor. So I felt compelled to the burnt offering. In his fear, in his need to do something, in the panic of all the people scattering, he didn't wait long enough for the right time. And so Samuel didn't make the offering. And we see at that point, it it's kind of one of those nails in the coffin of the end of Saul as king. And it just gets worse from there. But the next king after Saul was David. And in 1 Samuel 24, we see another bit where there's some waiting and a possible opportunity for getting it wrong, but he corrects himself. And it says in there, it says in 1 Samuel 24, when Saul is chasing after David, so David has been anointed the next king, and but at this stage, he's running for his life in fear. Saul's after him, and in this bit of the passage, he is hiding in a cave. And he came to the sheep's pen along the way. A cave was there, and Saul went in to relieve himself, went to the toilet, as you do. David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said to him, "This is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, 'I will give your enemy into your hands, for you dealt with us as you wish.'" Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. After David was conscience-stricken for having cut off a corner of his robe, he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." With these words, David sharply rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way. There was an opportunity there for David to step in. He'd been anointed king. He knew he was going to be the next king. And this was the opportunity. This was an opportunity in this cave to deal with Saul once and for all, so that David could come out and claim the kingship that he'd been anointed for and get on with being king. But as he was in that act, he just became aware of God's Spirit speaking to him. And he stopped. And he remembered that this is God's anointed king at this time. And he knew he needed to wait for the right time, when God would do it and that he would step into the kingship that was ready for him. So this seeing what the Father is doing, seeing what the Father is doing, and having that confidence to wait, the power of waiting. And then we see it even with the disciples as well. Lots of different passages, lots of different places. But in Acts 1, Jesus says to his disciples, "Wait. Wait in Jerusalem for the promise of the Holy Spirit." Jesus had risen. He was walking among them. He was getting ready to go back to heaven. But he said, "Wait. Wait in Jerusalem." And there was in that midst of waiting that at God's time, the Holy Spirit came and filled. And we know the story on from there. So what is this waiting about? I think there's a lot of different things in there. There's waiting for God's timing. But there's part of it as well, which is that it's just, this is God's. This is Jesus' ministry. And he's at work in people's lives. And as we listen to him, as we listen to his voice, we can minister with him in what it is that he's doing. And so we're waiting for him, waiting for him to do what he wants to do at his time and in his place. And we learn as followers of Jesus how to do that. And some of this stuff that we talked about is waiting in a short term. But there's waiting for some of us, which is longer term. God has spoken something to us. He's given us a vision. He's given us a dream. And we're waiting for God to do it. And actually in that waiting, as I asked at the beginning, what are you waiting for at the moment? Is there a dream that God's given you and you're waiting for God to do something and you're frustrated in the midst of it, or you're excited, but it's kind of like, come on, God, come on, God, come on, God. And just in that story, Jesus knew, in Lazarus, Jesus knew what was happening. He knew the right time to be there. He knew that he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. Yet in that time, as he arrived with Mary and Martha, he wept with them as well. And there was just a sense in the story of the compassion of Jesus as we wait. They thought they were going to wait to see Lazarus when he was risen again at the end. But he wept with them, even though he knew he was about to raise Lazarus from the dead. And there's a sense of, in our waiting, Jesus wants to come and meet with us in his compassion. Just one quick story as we finish in our waiting, my story, and how that just worked out, and just the what I wanted to see happen and was frustrated that it wasn't happening, but just God's timing in the midst of it. And this one was a big one that was for Natalie and I. We knew when we got married that the thing that we were about was family. And seeing godly family raised up. And so we thought that when we got married, that we would probably have children quite quickly, and that we would, that would be what life was. And it took a bit of time. We were kind of getting to the stage where we were starting to question whether it was even possible and whether we needed to go and see the doctors about it and all that kind of stuff. But God just kept saying, wait, wait. And we were like, okay. And so we waited. And then that was where the opportunity for going to New Zealand happened. And we got asked if we'd go and work for a church in New Zealand. And so we were like, well, God, you've put this before us. We thought we were about this, but you've put this thing in front of us. It seems like you're saying yes to it. So we'll take that with both hands and jump in and go for it. So we did. So we moved to New Zealand, thinking we'd gone to live there forever, because that's what we felt God was saying. And so we went. And we just kind of left the children thing with a bit of a kind of a grieving and a sadness, but we just were like, this is what God's called us into. It would have been so much harder if we'd had children to make this move, so we'll go for it. And after about a year of being in New Zealand, a gentleman came to us in the church who was gifted prophetically, and he's just said to my wife Natalie, he said, would you like a baby? And she just was like, yes, burst into tears. And he said, what God didn't give you in England, he's going to give you in New Zealand. And we're like, wow, that's amazing. When's this going to be? And so Natalie went to see him, and a bit later on, and he said, do you want to hear the rest? And we're like, yeah. And he said, so don't recommend this bit. And a lot of prophetic teaching says don't talk about times. But he said to Natalie, this time next year, you'll have a baby. And he was spot on, absolutely spot on. It was perfect timing. Matthew was born in New Zealand. He's called Matthew because it's a gift from God. But just the way the timing worked out, and it just didn't quite make sense. But now it does make sense, that opportunity to do that. And so it was God's timing, not our timing. It was God's work, not our work. And so for some of us tonight, there may be things that we're waiting for, and it's frustrating, and we're not quite sure what to do and how to live in that. And I think the word for that situation is around do the thing that God's given you as you wait for that dream, that vision, that thing that God's, that bigger thing that God's given you. Do the thing that God's put in front of you. So the power of waiting. Waiting for the right time for God to do his thing. As I was praying earlier, and we're coming in to finish and to pray, one of the words that I felt that we needed to pray into, and Paul's going to lead us this in a minute, but one of the things I felt we needed to pray into was this this sense of frustration and this sadness about waiting, and it's not been the right time. the sadness that Mary and Martha felt, and that for some of us that might be the case, and we need to pray for you. I'd love to pray for you, and the team would love to pray for you, just to know Jesus with you, his compassion, him being alongside you. And then I had one specific word, which was for someone who was, it was work-related situation, and you're seeking a breakthrough. And the name I had was Rachel, so I don't know if there's a Rachel in the room, that there's something that's specific around a workplace. But if you've got a workplace or situation where you need to see breakthrough and you're waiting for God's timing in that, then we'd love to pray for you as well. Why don't we stand? There was a sense beforehand as we were praying as well that waiting for the Holy Spirit. And as I hand over to Paul to lead us in this next phase of our gathering together, it'd be good for us just to wait. I'm going to just invite the Holy Spirit to come. Just to come and speak and minister to each one of us. So Holy Spirit, we welcome you. Holy Spirit, we welcome you to come and move among us. Holy Spirit, come.